not of those readings that we took earlier. Let me direct you back, where we make reference to each of them, but I'll direct you back particularly to begin as we study this morning, meditate on God's Word, as we might read it once more, that central passage where Jesus himself raises the question. Either side of this, in chapter 5 and chapter 9, it is the objections that we have recorded, but in chapter 7, we read Jesus' response. It is there also in another form in chapter 5. But Jesus raises the matter with the people around him at this point. He answered and said to them, verse 21, I did one work, and you all marvel. Moses therefore gave you circumcision, not that it is from Moses, but from the fathers. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. It had to be done on the eighth day after birth. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath, so that the law of Moses should not be broken, are you angry with me because I made a man completely well on the Sabbath? Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. I would hope that as we have been reading and studying in John's Gospel, you will have noticed that as John tells his story, there is a build-up of tension between Jesus and those that John calls the Jews. These were especially the religious leaders among the Jews. And one of the major contributing factors, it's not major in terms of volume of material in the Gospel thus far, but it is one of the major factors in that tension, that conflict that was arising, growing opposition that Jesus faced, a great deal of it was around the Sabbath. If you were to trace back the ways that when it crops up where the Jews were plotting to deal with him, to arrest him, to kill him, it is very closely associated with those instances of how he dealt with the Sabbath. You'll find a number of similar examples in the other Gospels as well, of course. They're different, a number of additional instances, but we've been studying in John, and we'll just focus on the particular way that it is drawn out in this Gospel, in John, the context of John. I'm gathering these together this morning, although we have touched on, not more than touched, as we've looked through those passages in there, giving the wider story. But remember, too, that when John is telling this story, his record, his guiding principle is that the Gospel is the presentation of Jesus. That's what he's about. He's saying to you and to me, everyone who reads it and hears it, he says, look at Jesus and consider who he is. That's what it's all about. And we need to bear that in mind as well when we consider the Sabbath in the Gospel of John. And I would present it as Jesus' Sabbath. What does Jesus do with the Sabbath, as John records it? There was the practice of the Sabbath in Jesus' day, what was done with it or not, all around him. Then there was his different approach, as is reflected in just these few verses that I've focused on. What did he bring to men as he acted and as he taught on the Sabbath and about the Sabbath? And then, as I hinted earlier, there is one particular event which we haven't read yet, but we will in a moment, for a little later. There's one particular event relating to the Sabbath and Jesus, and I believe it shows just how closely entwined they are and goes a long way towards demonstrating why Jesus did behave and speak in these ways among the people. And so I would dwell a little this morning on the Sabbath that Jesus found, what was there around him as he lived among men. The Sabbath that Jesus found. But the Sabbath also that Jesus brought into that situation. And thirdly, the Sabbath that Jesus won, that he gained, that he won. The Sabbath that Jesus found, first of all, even just the few instances we have read, this is all there is about the Sabbath in the Gospel according to John, what we've just read this morning. Even these few instances, we read there, we discover that what Jesus did was dead against the way that the Sabbath was being treated at that time. And I say being treated, perhaps not by every individual, but certainly by the leaders. And if you wanted to be accepted by them and supported with them, then you would have to toe their line. But what Jesus was doing was completely against it, it seems. And in John's Gospel, the particular interest is in two men who were healed. There's one example in chapter 5, and there's another example in chapter 9. And as I said, chapter 7 is a reference back to that man who was made completely well in chapter 5. There are two cases, that's all there is. Two cases of what Jesus did on the Sabbath that was objected to, and both of them were healings. And several of the other Gospels tell you of other healings that took place on the Sabbath. The first one, chapter 5, was of a lame or a crippled man, and there was also in chapter 9 a man born blind. And we need to go through this fairly quickly because there is a fair bit here. But notice how both of these men had been unwell for quite a long time. Chapter 5, that man who was trying to get to the pool to be touched by the angel or the spirit, he couldn't do it. And he couldn't do it for 38 years. And there, on the Sabbath day, Jesus came, found him, and healed him. The second, the man who was blind, that was healed, who could see, in chapter 9, do you remember that he was blind since birth? And this was a man, not just a little kid, not just a baby, but a man, a grown man who for years had been blind since birth. So here were two people, there's something quite significant about this, two people who had been in this condition for a long time. Jesus came and specifically on the Sabbath, in each case, he did a dramatic work that healed them. Now this is quite significant in the context of the time. The rules for the Sabbath that they reckoned he was breaking. The rules of the time were that, yes, healing was possible, or something in that area of healing. It was possible, but only if it was an unquestionable emergency. Let me give you a couple of examples. There's one that I've seen quoted where, let's say in Japan, a house collapses. And it was known that there would be people inside. So rescuers could come on the Sabbath, they could come and investigate. And if they found that there was somebody there whose life was threatened right at that moment, then they could excavate. They could get in and get that person out. But if they judged that that person was going to be all right until, in this case, Sunday, the next day, they had to leave him. Under that rubble. That was the rule. A similar case, if a house was burning down. The main thing, yes, you could rescue the person, the people out of that house, but you would leave the house. That was unacceptable to deal with that. Only an absolute emergency. Only then could you deal with it. Deal with and look after the person. Take another example from one of the other Gospels in both Mark and chapter 2 and Matthew chapter 12. There's a story where Jesus was walking with his disciples and it was presumably a distance that was acceptable for the Sabbath. That was limited as well. But they walked through a field And the disciples, not Jesus, but the disciples plucked some heads of grain and chewed on them. And the Pharisees raised it with Jesus. They said, that was work. They picked them and they probably rubbed them so that the casings, the chaff, would come off and they could eat the grain. So on two counts, they were regarded as working. Now, if they had done that and they had, that was the first food that they'd had for, say, 3 weeks, and they were starving to death and they had had that, that might be acceptable. But this was in a setting where you'd most likely judge that those disciples were a little bit hungry, maybe in the middle of the day on the Sabbath. When you go home, you have your nice dinner. You're a little bit hungry by that stage. You're not starving to death. That's what made it unacceptable for them. That's to give you a picture of the level at which this thing was pitched at the time by the people around Jesus. And come back to these two men who were healed. One had been waiting for 38 years to be healed. Why did Jesus not come the day before? Why didn't he wait till the day after? Why did he do it on the Sabbath? What was the emergency about it? The same with the blind man, blind since birth. Yes, he would have been entitled to do it, they reckoned, if it had not been an emergency. But otherwise, if not, what? Well, there was no room. That was not permissible. Why could Jesus not have waited, even if that was the first he'd met them? Why couldn't he have said, well, come back, my surgery hour is tomorrow, and I'll deal with it then? But he didn't. It seems, and especially in the first case, that Jesus actively went in there. Jesus knew the heart of man. He knew what men were like. He knew what man's situation was. It seems as though the way the story is told, that he actively went in and went to that man. And he was aware of the circumstances. The man answered him quite rudely and explained that he'd been waiting for so long. But Jesus still went ahead. Jesus had a purpose in using the Sabbath for these reasons, it seems. This was the Sabbath that Jesus found. The restrictions, the restraints, the governing of it by these religious leaders. But as Jesus comes in, which we'll go on to in a moment, it's not the Sabbath that he meant it to be. We need to take a moment to look at that and to register just what was going on then. It's important for us today to remember that this is the Sabbath that Jesus found. And this is what he was responding to, and the things that he did, the things that he said. If you ask somebody for directions to their place, you really need them to say to you, well, which side are you coming from? If somebody comes, phones me sometimes, which they do, and says, well, how do I get to church in Cobham? And I say, well, which side are you coming from? Because if I said, if I gave directions as you were coming from the east, but they were coming from the west, they'd be completely the other way. The directions would be completely wrong. We need to know the direction that the world was heading, and the direction, therefore, to understand what Jesus was about. An example of this, particularly relating to Sunday. One year, many years ago, I was visiting in Korea, in Seoul, in the capital. I was visiting a very good friend who was taking me to his church on Sunday morning. And as we drove along, I was seeing people sweeping the path outside their shop and opening up the shop and so on. And I said to him, and I should have remembered, but I said to him, well, how well do people keep Sunday here? I should have remembered. He said, well, you need to remember that in Korea, Christian faith, anything biblical, is only about 100 years old. And that's so very different from Britain, where there are traces, records of Christian faith 1,600 years ago. You know, there's something very different. You can have the same point on the graph, but it can mean something very different if you're going up or you're going down. the way that Sunday was being used there in Korea was perhaps very similar to the way that it is here. Did you know that Europe, many people look to Europe and they have been saying, well, we need to have a European Sunday, everything free and open. Did you know that Europe is trying to put in place a ruling that you must be, shops and etc. must be closed for 36 hours at a weekend? They're reversing it all because they know it doesn't work. Which direction are you coming at? When Jesus came into the world, which direction were things heading with regard to the Sabbath? Indeed, with everything, but in this case, the Sabbath. In Korea, any careful use of Sunday was a bonus to them. Where things have gone far from what they once were, we need to be especially concerned. The way that Jesus was handling things here, when we read them, when we respond to them, when we seek to apply them for ourselves and how we use the day, we need to remember what he was coming into. What was the direction that things were taking at that time? The Sabbath that he found. In the light of that, what is the Sabbath that Jesus brought? That Sabbath was largely of human construction. Those rules about a collapsed house, a burning house, those rules about animals, about circumcision, about all of these things. Many of these things were a layer, a massive, thick layer over the top of what God had put in place in the first place. And you must keep that in mind when you go to apply what Jesus said about the Sabbath. And remember that the person you're looking at here is the Son of God himself, as he calls himself in those other cases, Matthew and Mark, the Lord of the Sabbath. He's not a mere man who sins in all that he does. This is true. This is good, what he did. We can rely on that. But our application must be careful. And I say this because it's a bit worrying when I hear Christian folks say, taking it up from Mark chapter 2, Matthew chapter 12, they say, but Jesus said the Sabbath is made for man. Yes, he did say that. That's not all that he said. That's not all that he did. Keep it in its context. Because when many have picked up on that and they said the Sabbath is made for man, by and large, it's used to claim that Jesus meant you're free to do as you please, made for man. But is that the case? Which direction was he coming at? He was coming in against this background. Try and understand that and remember it. I believe it cannot mean that we're free to use it as we please. There is not one thing in the Bible where that means, whether that applies for anything else. Let me give you an example. Another thing that God said is for man. Back at the beginning, God said, when he made man, he said, the earth, effectively he said, it's yours. You go out, subdue it, and have dominion over it. And so over the years, people have said, that means it's for man. And you know what's happened. The world, its resources, animals, extinct animals. They've been, that passage has been used, but it's been abused, it's been misused. Man has done what he pleases. But the true Christian approach has always been what the environmentalists are coming up with these days. Look after it. What does it mean to subdue it? It means to look after it. What does it mean that it's for man? It means that it's for your good. And how can it be for your good and for the good of the following generations if you destroy it? The Sabbath is made for man. It's made for your good. How did God make it for your good? He made it as a day of rest. He laid it out. We have it in, as it was spoken to the people of Israel, his special people. That's why it is laid out for them. 6 days you must labor. But there is another day that it belongs to God. It is for you as well. It is for your good. But be careful how you use it. It's not just your own to please yourself. Our Maker knows that we need rest. He knows that the land needs rest. There's a very clear picture of that in Leviticus. Don't be shy of Leviticus. Chapter 25. Israel, for 6 years they could work the land hard. Year 7, they were not to touch it. And then 7 times that, 49 years would be gone, and the 50th year was a major jubilee. Great time of rest, the Sabbath of Sabbaths. Again for the land, for all. People, slaves, were to be set free. That's what the Sabbath is about. It's about a cessation, a stopping of all the old things, and a new freedom. But what for? Is that just to do as you please? Surely not. If you were to do it at all, it would be to follow God's ruling, God's direction, not man's. Not man's pleasure. So we cannot be allowing that those words of Jesus that it is for man just to be for our own pleasure. He has our deeper interests at heart. He uses that day to, he does use it. He uses it well. He uses it for man's good, for man's healing. That's the point he's driving over. That's why we take as our text chapter 7. The circumcision was a symbolic symbol. It was a covenant sign of God's grace and his mercy upon man. This was a sign of God's goodness towards man. And Jesus takes it from the lesser to the sign. He takes it to the reality and he says, I've made a man completely well. And he means completely, because remember that story. He healed a man of his bodily needs and he came back to him and he said, now don't sin anymore. The complete healing. And these people were resisting. He has our deeper interests at heart. Our long-term interests. That's the whole environmental issue. People for many years have been very short-term in their thinking. But what about the long-term interests? Jesus has our eternal interests at heart. Truly long-term. Jesus, when he spoke those words, he was standing opposed to the opposite extreme, not the liberal way of dealing with things, not the absolute freedom as you please. It was quite the opposite. People were bound under a rigid system, and he was dealing with that. That was the context. That rigid system that was never intended, and it still is not. We need to grow up in our Christian thinking and think these things through, that it's not just about following a pattern of rules. Life isn't that simple. But think through from these principles that Jesus presents to us. He provided and he was leading towards a breakout from that bondage of man upon man. The binding effects of this world. The weekly Sabbath is to be a foretaste of the enduring rest, the enduring freedom from the world's bondage, a freedom to do, a freedom to work at what is enriching in life, the eternal things of life, the abundant living. That's what this is a foretaste of. In Hebrews we read several chapters dealing with the rest that God has for his people. Same word, same idea of the Sabbath. And it's an eternal thing. And that's why I touch as well on the Sabbath that Jesus won. It wasn't just something that he taught, but he brought it and he won an even greater Sabbath. There is that new freedom that Jesus brought for man through the Sabbath, the new Sabbath that he brought, but something even more exciting, although dreadful, than all that. I'm going to be turning to John chapter 19, the further mention of the Sabbath in the Gospel according to John. I'd like to turn it up in just one verse. John chapter 19, the previous verse, Jesus cried out, "It is finished." He bowed his head, he gave up his spirit. And then in verse 31, "Therefore, because it was the preparation day, that the body should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath." For that Sabbath was a high day. Remember, it was at the Passover time. The Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken to ensure that they were dead and that they might be taken away, that he should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath. There on the Sabbath eve, Jesus died and was buried. But what happened on that Sabbath, I believe, was a complete reversal, like so many of God's works for us. It was a complete reversal of the way that it looked on the surface. I read of a sermon of a black American preacher, and he was speaking of the very dark days that many folk experience in life, and some of you perhaps have done as well. And he was working from what we call Good Friday, all those events around the cross. And in the dark things of life, remember that all was very dark on that Friday. He was saying there are things in life that are like that dark Friday. It's Friday, he would say, and you're struggling in life, one way or the other. But Sunday's coming, he said. It was Friday, the day before the Sabbath day, that Jesus died and all hope vanished. But Sunday was coming. And we know now that hope was renewed. It was brand new. It was living hope. Peter describes it as that in his first letter. It's Friday for many. But Sunday's coming. And how do we know that? Is because of that Sabbath, that dark Sabbath of Jesus, but a Sabbath that he won out of that darkness. I want you to think of the Sabbath between the Friday and the Sunday. Many people will talk and have talked over many centuries about the great celebration, the great day of the Christian church being Easter. And you look at most calendars and Good Friday is marked out, and Easter Sunday is marked out. But there's a blank in the middle. And there was a blank in the middle. A dreadful blank. Dreadful emptiness for God's people, Jesus' people, his followers, his disciples. But let's think about that day. It was the Sabbath day. What was there then? It was a high day. It was the day when the Jews were celebrating Passover. But this Jesus, who had been giving them such trouble over the Sabbath, he wasn't there anymore. You could almost imagine a sigh of relief, these leaders, Jewish leaders. Oh, we've got a Sabbath without Jesus, at last. But what was Jesus doing? It looked like the old ways had won. That Sabbath that Jesus found, it seems to have won. It's remained undisturbed on that day. These people could go about putting their heavy burdens on people in peace. Jesus was shut out of the Sabbath. And he had said in another gospel, he is the Lord of the Sabbath. God's hallowed holy day. Jesus was shut out. Hebrews 13, verse 12 tells us something similar. "Therefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate." He was shut out of the city. He was shut out of the Sabbath. And now remember what he was teaching that Sabbath was about. The Sabbath was for man's good. The Sabbath was for giving life. The Sabbath was for healing, for positive things, for rest, for recuperation, for recreation, week by week. He came as the Lord of the Sabbath to heal, to recreate. And it's almost as though on this particular Sabbath he's withdrawn from the old Sabbath to bring about a new one. He has died, but the next day he would rise again with new life. The Son of Righteousness with healing in his wings, as the prophet said. He said to the Jews in chapter 5, he said, "My Father works and I work." They knew what he meant, that he was talking about God's work on that Sabbath. Yes, God rested on the first Sabbath, but he entered into the work of upholding and the works of mercy, the works of caring for man. He was doing that work, and now he does it to the ultimate through his absence from the Sabbath for that day. The very fact of his going into the grave, he took the curse of sin upon him to heal man in the supreme way. Chapter 7 we read that they were objecting to him healing man completely. That's what he was about. That was his great purpose. And it just strikes me so forcibly that that great Sabbath event that was so important to them, he was missing because he was accomplishing the true, the eternal, everlasting rest for those who would trust in him. I might well have headed this, the Sabbath that Jesus missed. I think it's better to record that it was the Sabbath that he won by missing that one. Hebrews chapters 3 and 4 talk about this rest. Tells us that in the old days Joshua could not complete that rest. As the picture that he's leading to. But the great Joshua, Jesus, the great Savior of God's people, Hebrews 3 and 4 says there is a rest that waits for the people of God. It's there. It's been obtained. It's been won. And that's what Jesus was doing as he absented himself on that Sabbath amongst men. Friends, the prophet, the ancient prophet Isaiah, he says, chapter 58, call the Sabbath a delight. And you will do that if you remember it's the day that God gave and if God is your delight. Yes, it's made for man, but what is man made for? But to glorify God and enjoy him forever. It's not our own pleasure without the direction, the light of God and his Spirit. Dwell on the way that he has won that Sabbath, that eternal rest for you, the new life, if you believe. If you do not believe, I plead with you again to dwell, to give serious thought once again on what it is that Jesus came to do. One thing, to give healing, to give life. That's what he was about. To give rest. That's the priceless theme in John. And the Sabbath is a vital part of that. It's here in Jesus that rest is to be found. That believing in him as the Son of God, you will find life. It links with freedom. In John chapter 4. It links with the promise that Jesus gave, as Matthew records it. Chapter 11, the end of chapter 11. Immediately before the story of the disciples taking grain in the field, the Sabbath, immediately before that, Jesus said, do you know these words? Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. And that's what he had set about showing not that burden of those rules of man on the Sabbath. How many ways are there that men, women, young folk find that they have to keep up in life? Maybe the tough times and you've got to push on through. There may be the good times and you feel you've got to keep up there so that you don't fall out. Maybe the surroundings and the people all around you, what's popular of the day, and you feel you've got to keep up with it. Take my yoke on you. Find rest for your souls. The Sabbath is to take you all out of all that. Today is to take you out of all that. That today, put the other things aside. Breathe a little. Maybe that breath that the Spirit put on man at the very beginning. The breath of life, the breath of the Spirit. Breathe a bit. Live. Find peace. Don't let those other things be disturbing you, pushing you, tearing you. What a privilege, what a blessing the Lord has given in the Sabbath. But it is only through, finally, through this Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, which he was renewing, yes, for men. Let's hear. Let's understand. The Sabbath. Let's understand the Sabbath that Jesus found. Understand the Sabbath he brought. And rejoice in the Sabbath that he won. And use it. Even now, today. May he bless his word now to us.